happens to most people that I've spoken to is that something will trigger them. Something, it's often like quite a trauma, you know, a car accident or something like that. When you're brought through some kind of, you know, you're wheeled down a gurney and you're like, oh, yeah, this is a familiar feeling. What was the trigger for yourself?
The trigger. Well, the one thing I remember from childhood was waking up from a dream, which I don't think was a dream, where I was taken out in the middle of the night and left alone under a street lamp. And I was told by my sister, and she said, stay here under the light until I come back to get you. And I stayed, and I got more and more scared. I'm a little girl, 4 years old, in the middle of a pitch black night under this lamp. And there, I couldn't see anything outside where the light was shining. So I waited and waited, got more and more scared, and then I started screaming because I was so scared and I just wanted her to come and get me. And I woke up in my bed, and my mom came running in to kind of go, shh, 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 don't wake up your father. And so I kind of got quiet. And any spontaneous recall, I think at that point, kind of got sort of disapproved of, or at least that's the way I interpreted it as a four-year-old. It's like, well, don't bother your parents with your problems. And there was so much going on in the household, I think that it was pretty effective cover for what I was going through at night.
So so what kind of household is it? A military background by any chance?
Yeah. My dad was in the military. And he was stationed in the Philippines in World War II. He was in the Army. He wasn't a career military, but, you know, he was in the military.
So.
Got a friend back here.
You seem to have a bit of feedback coming through.
I know. I tried to.
It may be your speakers up. If you just need to turn your speakers down a tiny bit so that they go under the threshold that Skype thinks is silence.
Okay. Let me try one other.
So thing. you should be able to turn it down so that you can hear my voice.
Yeah.
Is that comfortable?
Let me see what I can do here. I'm going to try to plug in my microphone and see if that helps.
All right. Well, anyway, your sound is quite you know, this is good audio. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. So do you know, speaking of abductions, if your mother and grandmother and that sort of line have been also affected in this way?
Well, I don't know about my mother's side of the family, but I would guess probably yes, even though it's never been mentioned, and I don't know if they would be conscious of it. But on my father's side, I believe he was also taken, as I was, and he was the one that when I was a teenager, he handed me all three of Eric von Daniken's Chariots of the Gods books to read. And he was quite insistent that I read them. He thought that they were fascinating. And so I know he was very interested in this topic as well.
Yeah, Eric. I remember that. I read that. I was a kid in the 60s, so...
Mm-hmm.
So when I started reading, it was like the early 70s. So there are all these amazing books, von Daniken and all the stuff about the lines drawn in the sand and crop circles and all of that sort of stuff. So I've always had this fascination for these things, even though I don't believe, I can't remember consciously ever meeting somebody or something from other than Britain, from where I'm standing, no one was sort of local. So there is a kind of vibratory sense that I pick up when mm-hmm. I speak to people who have had this kind of experience. It's like, the only word I can find is like rattled. You know, somebody's been rattled. They vibrated very violently, much more violently than humans are used to in the normal world. And it's, you know, it can infuse into other psychological expressions like paranoia like a kind of terror of things. But essentially it is the word, the only word you can think of is alien. It's an alien vibration. And so is this what you're feeling when I ask you about your mother and your grandmother, do you get this sense? Is that what we're talking about?
A sense that they have had experiences?
Yeah.
Well, my mother probably had an experience because I really feel strongly I was adjusted in the womb. And so that would definitely involve her. But she has never, ever, ever mentioned anything about anything strange or that she might have had an experience. So I don't know really what to do as far as, you know, my mother. My father, I'm sure that he and I would probably have had some very interesting conversations about this if he was still living. But he passed away in 1976.
Right, so that was, so you were quite young then.
Yeah.
And presumably not kind of reawakened.
Right.
So, so you were saying that, you know, you're kind of born awake, but there's been large blocks of apparently missing time that seem to have appeared since then. What's your experience? I have no idea because I've got, you know, as far as the entire 80s was a period of missing time for me, but, you know, that, there's other reasons for that. But is there a sense that, I can almost just about reach that memory, but I just can't? Or is there, there's nothing there, no memory?
Well, there's always been something, and it just was hard to put my finger on it. At 9 years old, I remember waking up with this pain behind my right ear, and so I reached, you know, to touch and see what on earth is hurting back there, and to my surprise, there was a fairly large bump behind my right ear, and it's still there. And the strange thing about this was that I had, when I felt the bump there, I was old enough to know about cancer, and I thought, oh my God, do I have cancer? Is that a tumor? Am I going to die? And that's pretty intense feelings for a 9-year-old. But then somehow it was almost like that whole fright about being ill was removed, and I kind of forgot about it, which, I mean, how are you going to forget about if you're afraid you're going to die? So anyway, I forgot about it, and then if I thought about it later on, I just thought, oh, that bump, that's just part of the natural bone of my head. It's just the way it's formed. And then years and years later, I was in a movie theater, and I was seeing the movie Fire in the Sky about Travis Walton's story, and it seemed like in the movies, when they were in the bar after Travis had been taken, there was like a stuffed owl that flashed on the screen. And when that stuffed owl flashed on the screen, then this memory of the bump and the pain and the fear about it came rushing back. And suddenly I'm sitting in my seat in the dark theater, and it's as if all the breath has been squeezed out of my body, because I'm just thinking, oh my God, that's where the bump really came from. Now I remember it all. And it was very startling. So those were some of the spontaneous recall experiences.
Right. Now, Fire in the Sky, to me, was one of the most authentic movies. Because it you could really feel this alien vibe that I'm talking about, that space vibe. And particularly the bit when he's like up in the ship and he's kind of groping around in the dark and he's like all these glippy things, you know. It really does put you in that not very comfortable position. And, you know, this is something that, you know, we're having to accommodate within our being in order to progress into the future. We're going to need to accommodate all of these energies, of, you know, xeno material, you know, xenopolitics and all of that stuff, you know, stuff from elsewhere. Sorry, is that, you've got a very loud, background sound. Have you got an aeroplane in the background? Or a fan?
Not here. Yeah.
It's very, very quiet in the room.
All right. It must be, you're on a laptop.
Yeah.
Must be that it's the, it's the, the fan, the internal fan of the laptop.
Well, maybe. I'm not hearing it on this end. My laptop seems very quiet.
All right, yeah.
I'm not sure what all this interference and feedback is because I haven't had this before.
Really? Interesting. That's it gone away. I hope nobody's on playing around at Studio B there on the machine. Anyway, so we're that's gotten a lot clearer. So so there you are. These events are starting to come back. Now, it's interesting, the owl.
Owl.
Yeah. Every time I say owl, it repeats back with me.
Okay.
Owl. That is coming up. But the
We're doing this in two different places in time and space. You know, one is here and the other is an alternate reality. They're just a little out of sync. That's what's going on here. I know it.
Oh, we'll talk about that as well. So there's the image of the owl and it just, you know, straight to the idea of the show Twin Peaks. Did you ever see Twin Peaks?
No, I didn't.
All right. Well, that'll trigger you.
trigger
your butt off, as they say. Because it's, there's this lady, and, she lives in the woods and she carries a piece of log around her with her and the log speaks to her. She's like a shaman. And one of the things she says mysteriously is the owls are not what they seem. And, it is about, extraterrestrial abductions, Project Blue Book, the, one of the guy's fathers is a military guy and he worked on Blue Book, which was the, sort of let's debunk all the alien things by retrieving stuff from crashes and saying it's pieces of weather balloon, you know. Basically, that's what Blue Book, there were other projects that did other things, that did the real stuff, but this was the kind of problem. Anyway, so, but it was basically the inroad into, acceptance of the idea that we're not alone by the military, at least. Anyway, so Twin Peaks was about a town where there was a vortex, you know, everything was happening there. There was a drug dealer going on, there was, flesh trading, and there was extraterrestrial abductions and there's military and, you know, and it's beautifully all kind of welded together oh God, I've forgotten his name. I'll come back with it. It'll come back to me. He's a very famous film director and he did Eraserhead and other, his stuff is really disturbed, Blue Velvet. His name is completely out of my brain. Anyway, it'll come back and I'll stop thinking about it.
Okay.
So, in fact, it would be better if I actually shut the heck up and let you speak. And so, do you want to go forward from the point of, okay, so you were planted back in that feeling.
Yeah.
You knew you've been there before. This is not something that is, you know, and it's not just one time. It's multiple times, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Definitely multiple times. The childhood abduction, I remember them it was the gray aliens with the big black eyes. And they took me, and when I looked at the street lamp experience under hypnosis, I was actually taken up to a ship. I was taken through my ceiling, you know, just levitated through the ceiling. And what they did with me there was they looked at my abdominal area with something that in my four-year-old state of mind, I called it a stomach presser. They have the stomach presser on me, and it's pressing into me really hard, and it hurts. And when I came out of hypnosis, I thought, wow, that reminded me of an ultrasound. So it was almost like they were looking at my internal organs, probably my reproductive organs, even when I was just a little girl, to see if everything was kind of up to speed with what they wanted. And apparently it was, because the abductions continued all through childhood and then into adulthood. And I did have hybrid offspring. And it was, they were taken with a long needle. They would go in through the belly button and remove the fetus from the womb and take it out. And that's what I remember under hypnosis. The interesting part of this is that when I had a hysterectomy in 2008, and then also years earlier when I had a tubal ligation, both of the doctors, the one that did the tubal ligation when I was 35, and then in my late 50s, you know, the hysterectomy, both the doctors said, you know, when we went in to do the operation, your abdominal cavity is full of adhesions. Have you had any other procedures? And I said, no, you know, I haven't. You know, I mean, I had the tubal ligation back when I was 35, but I didn't remember having any other procedures. So when I had hypnosis and discovered that they had gone in through the belly button with a needle and probed around in the womb to take out the fetus, that explained those adhesions in my abdominal cavity.
So you couldn't see them on the outside, but they'd healed. Yeah.
Yes. I've, on the inside.
I've heard about this device that they have that, like, is almost like if you had a, it unrolls as a foil, metal foil, and they can then put this onto your skin, and then it splits apart as if it's like two layers, and then you can look inside someone and then take the thing back out, and it's nothing, as if nothing had happened.
Right.
They have this stuff, it appears. Anyway, so, having to process all of these feelings with nobody to talk to.
It's very, very difficult.
Must have been.
Yeah.
And how did you express this energy? Mm-hmm. People go their own way, you know? they do what they do.
Yeah. Well, again, I wasn't having conscious recall of these experiences until much later in life. I was with two friends when I was seeing fire in the sky, and coincidentally, one of those friends, we were talking about all kinds of stuff, and I call him Nick in my book, and he sat me down one afternoon, and he says, I noticed that you don't talk about your military time very much, you know. He says, why don't you tell me about it? You know, what exactly happened to you? What did you do in the military? And I said, oh, that's no problem. And I said, I went in April of 79. I was at Lackland Air Force Base for 6 weeks for boot camp. And then we were bused to Biloxi, Mississippi, where I did technical training school. And I was there for some months, and then went home for Christmas and Thanksgiving. And then I reported to my next duty station, which was Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada, and I worked at Tonopah Electronic Warfare Range. And as soon as I said that I worked at Tonopah Electronic Warfare Range, I stopped talking, because this wave of nausea and terror swept over me as I realized I couldn't remember anything about working at Tonopah, and that was like 3+ months of my life gone, missing, nothing there. And that was very frightening. it was very frightening to realize that there was that big a chunk of my mind where I just couldn't remember a thing.
So you said it hit you in the stomach. That it was,
yeah.
There was the block that is put in there,
mm-hmm.
causes you to feel disoriented, terrified,
mm-hmm.
And you know, basically, you know, like somewhere you don't want to go.
Right. But, you know, of course, I had to find out what happened, and it was like I was driven at that point. Oh, my God, I can't remember what happened. I've got to remember what on earth happened to me at that time. And so it was not too long after that, within a year, in 1994, I attended the Whole Life Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada, which actually was the first time I met Alex Collier. And so I saw Bud Hopkins there as well and attended his lecture. And at the end of it, I raised my hand and I said, well, I have this strange experience from childhood, and I have this other one, and then I have 3 months of missing time from the military. And about that time, he just kind of stopped me from talking. He says, talk to me after we get done here. And I said, okay. So when he was done with the lecture, I talked with him privately. And he says, sounds like you have a lot going on. He said, would you like to have some hypnosis and try to figure out what that is? And I said, yes, very much. Because it's hard to feel this scared about something. I don't even know why I'm scared. And so we had hypnosis, and that's when a chunk of the memories came out. And I remember being taken out in the middle of the night to test the radar that I worked on extraterrestrial craft. And they couldn't be tracked, and we were forbidden to speak to each other. We were given fatigues to wear with no rank insignia, no name tags, no identifying marks. We were forbidden to speak to each other on the crew except what was absolutely necessary to test the radar on the craft. And then afterwards, we were told to stand outside on the deck of the radar van while other people talked about the results of the radar tests in the radar van. So I'm standing out on this deck, and I'm looking in the sky, looking at these saucers, and they're just kind of hovering there as if they're waiting to see if people want to do any more tests. And I was looking at the one that was closest. It was glowing orange on the bottom, and I was hearing a sound that sounded like kind of a crackling hum, like speakers at a rock concert that are turned on, but no music is coming through, and they're just kind of sitting there humming with a crackle now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what I was hearing. And I was really scared because when you're in the military, they give you a lot of information about the different levels of classification. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, this is way, way higher classified than top secret. And all I have is a secret security clearance. And knowing that I just had a secret security clearance really was terrifying, because I was really afraid what was going to happen to me next, because I felt like I didn't have the clearance to see what I was seeing. And I was right to be scared, because they put us on a bus with painted over windows, took us to what I think was either Area 51 or an underground facility at Tonopah. And at that point, we were put in a waiting room. With the lights off in the waiting room, there was a lot of things done that seemed like to try to make it hard for people to remember details, like the uniforms with no identifying marks or name tags, and then sitting us in a waiting room with the lights off, forbidding us to talk to each other by people with guns. So, you know, you just are going to obey the people with guns because you don't want to get shot. And so we're all sitting there silent, not looking at each other, not talking, and one by one they called us over into this little side room. And when it was my turn, I went in there. There was a armed security guard in there standing at parade rest. I was told to lay down on a stainless steel examining table, and then someone walked, you know, I laid there for quite a while, then someone walked in and said, stay calm, 3 times in a deadpan voice. And when he got up beside the right side of my head, he, with one smooth move, as if he'd done it many times, he injected me in the side of the neck with a needle, a hypodermic, and the chemical in that just went straight to the brain. And at that point, you know, I was pretty terrified. And the hypnosis session with Bud ended very shortly after that. It was later hypnosis sessions that I found out what happened after the injection. So after the injection, I was taken off the table. I was dragged down a flight of stairs because I was in shock from the injection. I was shaking. I was dragged down a very long flight of stairs, and at the bottom of the stairs, there was a little room where I was shoved in. The door was shut and locked, and there was like a one-way mirror or glass there where I glanced at it, and I thought, gosh, is somebody going to look at me through this window? And I'm like laying on the floor of this little booth or room, trying to kind of hold myself together, because whatever they injected me with, it made me feel like soda pop fizz, like my body was just going to fall apart or, you know, come apart some way. And I don't know how long that went on, but it was very strange, very terrifying, and I just kind of screamed for a while. Then as it began to dissipate and wear off, I was dragged out of the room by two security guards, and that's when I was sexually assaulted by the two security guards. And eight people watched the assault. And I'm pretty sure from what I know now about trauma-based mind control that that was to increase the amount of shame and fear that I would feel and just make it such an overwhelming, cruel experience that my own personality defense mechanism would take that memory and bury it in the deep subconscious so that I wouldn't remember. But I think this happened to me multiple times during that 3-month time period. And just hasn't been easy to live with those memories. I'm doing pretty good today, but when I first got those memories back, it was very, very tough. I really sat wondering how I was going to live with them.
So we've, it's, what can I say?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can I
say? Not much
I
can say to that.
Mm-hmm. It's no comfort to know that you're not alone.
Well,
that it's happened to multiple people, many.
Excuse me.
I know that it happened
to other people, and it's not really a comfort. I wouldn't wish this to happen to anyone. And the fact that it has happened to other people. The only comfort that I could draw from that was to know that I wasn't crazy. I wasn't remembering something completely bizarre and fabricated, that whatever, what I had remembered and felt during the hypnosis session, re-experienced under a hypnosis session was real. And there were other people that had offered their own experiences and testimony that kind of fit together with mine. And that it was really hard. Like one time I went to a group after I had hypnosis with Bud, it was like, oh man, I gotta find out what's going on here. And so I went to different groups, and one group I went to was very scary because it got to be my time to talk in the circle, the sharing circle, and I said, well, I think I was taken out in the middle of the night to test the radar on UFOs. And then I think I was taken back to possibly Area 51 where they did some kind of mind wipe procedure on me. And I didn't give any details about the injection or anything because I was looking to hear other people's details to confirm my own, you know. And so a man across the room, after I said that, said, did they stick you in the side of the neck with a needle too? And my blood ran cold because that's exactly what they had done. And so I kind of sat there quietly. I nodded my head, and when the group was over, I couldn't get out of that room fast enough and get away because that was like more confirmation than I could handle at that time.
Yeah, because this is the kind of thing you want to be just a dream.
Yes.
So what do you do with this? Mm-hmm. What do you do with that? Now you know How do you go? Where do you go? What happens next?
What happened next? Well, I kept up with my kind of quest. You know, I was kind of driven. You know, what the heck happened? How does this happen in the United States of America, which is supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave? And my idea of what the United States of America was at that point went completely up in smoke. And I just started reading and studying and talking to as many people as I could to try to find out what the heck happened to me out there, how much does it happen, and in what political and social context is it even possible for things like this to happen to someone. And I found lots of answers and lots of material. And I pretty much did this research quietly on my own for 14 years, while at the same time digging in my heels and saying, there's no way I'm going to ever go public with this. It's too terrifying. Somebody went to a lot of trouble to make me forget this. And if they've been monitoring me and they know that I'm now starting to remember, I mean, it was just all really terrifying. And so I really thought that I would never go public for 14 years. And then one day I realized a couple things. One was, by staying silent, I'm allowing the abuse that happened to me to indirectly, I'm allowing it to happen to other people because I'm keeping quiet. And I couldn't really live with that. Once I had that thought, that was like intolerable. And then the other part is, when you're that scared, basically somebody has taken your personal power away from you. And I just thought, I don't know that I can live with having my power kind of ripped away from me by these people that terrified me and caused me to forget this stuff. And so finally, I did go public. There were a few other factors, like I worked with a business life coach for a while trying to start some kind of business for myself, and nothing really worked despite the fact I followed all the formulas. And later on, I realized why it didn't work, because you can't really build a life with a gorilla hanging off of your back. That's this huge secret that you're trying to keep quiet so it doesn't get out and wreak havoc with your life. And so after working with the business coach for 3 years, I stopped working with her, and I went quiet, kind of a meditative state, and I said, okay, universe, what is my special gift to bring to the world? Because the other things I'm trying aren't working. And I want to know what it is I'm supposed to do. And I didn't even get the chance to finish framing those questions before the answer was right there from my spirit guides. And they said, tell your story. And that was the one thing that I'd been avoiding for 14 years up to that point. And so I knew what they meant. And so at that point, I wrote an article and went public. I did a few radio interviews. It seemed to me that people were getting very hung up on the horror story. And by that time, you know, I was doing a lot of healing work to try to heal myself. In the beginning, when I started to investigate the memories, it was like, what happened? What political and social context did it happen in? And what's going on? And I couldn't find any answers. So I kind of shut down for a while. Then when I opened back up to it in 2002, 2003, it was from a different place. It was like, well, I don't know that I can get answers. The ETs aren't talking, the government's not talking, the military's not talking. So I can't get answers from them, but what can I do? I can work on healing. And so at that point, I just started trying to deal with all the emotional fallout. And I did find a healer to work with who was wonderful. She really brought me quite a long way with the post-traumatic stress disorder, and I was feeling really good. And then I started trying to build my own career. It didn't work, and then I got the message, tell your story. And that's when I went public, and I wrote an article. The first way I went public was I wrote an article for UFO Digest about my experiences, and then one thing led to another, and again, people that interviewed me back then seemed to get very hung up on, oh, this terrible thing happened to this poor woman. And yeah, that's true, but when you start to heal and you start to look at the larger cosmic picture of why did I have these experiences? You know, why would I? I mean, it kind of went from, why did I have these experiences? You know, oh my God, to a quiet question of, why on earth would I as a soul choose to be born and have this kind of a lifetime? And so when I started asking that question, then the openings and the synchronicities began to happen to kind of lead me to where I am today, which is I feel that I'm an ET wanderer that decided to take on a human lifetime for the purpose of my people learning more about humanity. So I took on this lifetime with its particular challenges, because that way when I go back and see my people on their ship, then they get the benefit of those memories and that life experience, and it gives them some idea, because they're telepathically connected with each other, so they have a hard time understanding what it's like for an Earth person down here who doesn't have that sense of connection, who effectively feels isolated and is moving through the world, in some ways struck blind, deaf, and dumb because they don't have all their expanded senses working. So I feel that kind of a role for my people, who I believe are Lyrans, and it gives them information to decide how best to help the people down here on Earth.
So what you are is a kind of on-the-spot reporter.
Yeah.
And you basically experience life as your journal.
Yeah.
And presumably... Hi guys. They'll be watching this one.
Yes.
They'll be able to download it from the internet, and you'll probably be able to get 3D holographic video downloaded from Galactic YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
YouTube. And so you were telling me off the air about the process, which in a way it sounds kind of is there a bliss involved in that? Is it a really quite a pleasant experience to go through the, can you tell us about, your experience these days? You know, you're used to them, you know who they are, they're your people, you're not scared of them.
Okay.
They got a space vibe, but you're cool with the space vibe, you're down with the space vibe, you know.
I'm part of it.
Yeah, and that's, you realize it's your intention is well there as well. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So basically you've achieved the galactic consciousness of your indwelling being. Yeah.
Yeah. Part of with myself, there's like a part of myself, maybe my higher self, that is kind of holding back my full sensory abilities. And then I think the other part of the holding back comes from my people. Because if I was suddenly, completely wide open with my expanded abilities, it would be pretty tough to be down here on Earth. Because there's so much stuff going on. There's been twice when I've tried to drop my walls and just let anything and everything in that was going on around me, and I shut things back down very quickly because a lot of things came in that were very hard to cope with. And so I think that I actually think Earth people, in some way, maybe all of us are kind of inhibiting our expanded abilities because it will be a sensory overload of a lot of really negative material. And it could be that we're kind of keeping that at bay. I know that I am. And when I go home, it is a beautiful, blissful experience. It's like being where there's a heavenly choir all around you, but you don't really hear it as sound. You more feel it as a vibration, and it feels very harmonious. And all the five separate physical senses we have on planet Earth, they all overlap there. So if you're feeling something, you may also smell it and hear it and see it as color. It's it's very hard to describe because our senses are separate here. You know, they're very distinct. You know, touch is one, hearing is one, seeing, smelling, tasting. But there, they all overlap. So if I was looking at the color blue, I would also be tasting it, smelling it, and hearing it as well. And I would have I'd have a visceral sense of the feel of it as well.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That is what they call synesthesia, when you can smell colors and see the color of music. I have a friend who sees music. You know, we play in a band together sometimes, and she's like, I can't say, you know, it's in A. She doesn't get that. You know, she doesn't get the technical thing. You know, it's like blue, okay, with some sparkles. Okay, we'll do that. Yeah. There's I think it might be part of, I don't know. If you were to take, for instance, a modern PC and load Windows 98 on it, you'd have a certain number of facilities on it. But it wouldn't be the same thing as what you could have today.
Right.
Presuming that the idea of that anything you could do on Windows 98 you couldn't do today. You know, but anyway, the analogy is kind of the idea that the skin suit is a computer and can run software and can run operating systems, and the different operating systems are your consciousness. And essentially it defines the boundaries of your consciousness.
Yeah.
If you had, like you're saying, if you had boundless consciousness, like what happens when you take acid, there's far too much information to process. And I personally like to do one thing at a time. I think it's really, it's really like yeah, it's like, it's meditative, it focuses, and it brings you to the one, to do the one thing. You know, if I'm painting, if I were to paint, I don't paint, I play guitar, but anyway, to just do one thing at a time, is very valuable. So, how did you express yourself in any way before you woke up? That kind of gave you clues as to, hang on, this is a bit weird. Mm-hmm. Where did this come from?
Well, I've been a spiritual person my whole life. When I was a little girl, I had a sense of a spiritual universe, an energetic universe, but I had no language with which to describe it, you know, because I came from a, you know, traditional 50s family that was trying, at least on the outside, to look like an Ozzie and Harriet sort of family. I just didn't have any language to frame what my inner experience was. So I thought, well, I'll figure it out. I'll go to Sunday school and I'll go to school and I'll learn things and then I'll figure out what this is. And so I really went the extra mile. As soon as I could walk and get myself to the library and have a library card, I was checking out books on science and history way, way above and beyond the call of, duty. To school, and was very well read and very well educated in science and history as a young girl. Meanwhile, my school studies really suffered because I guess I probably would have been diagnosed with ADHD when I was a little girl. I couldn't really keep my concentration in class. I was always wool gathering a million miles away. So I wasn't all that good of a student, but I just wanted to study what I wanted to study. And I didn't really find the answers that I wanted in science, though it was fascinating and it was definitely worthwhile reading. And then church was a complete loss. You know, I went there and I saw tons of hypocrisy and a lot of people being hurt, even though Jesus taught us to love everybody. And finally, I stayed with it through catechism and First Communion. And then at that point, no great mystery was revealed, and I just washed my hands of the whole traditional religious business. And
it didn't speak to you.
It didn't, and I just had to go my own way. And so I started looking into astrology and metaphysics and meditation, and that brought me closer to where I was starting to meet other people who were having similar inner experience. And that was very meaningful for me. Then when I had all these experiences from the military and my ET experiences come out, then it was a matter of, you know, well, how do I fit these into my cosmic picture of the universe, you know, and what's the best way to work with them? So that's why I spent 14 years researching shadow government things, mind control, all those things that had happened to me, to try to understand what they are, why they're done, and what is the political and social context in which a government or rogue elements within a government would get away with doing this kind of thing to someone and not being prosecuted as criminals.
So that's a very good point, because things that were, I mean, it was totally ignoring any idea of human rights. Of your right to, you know, just live your life without being molested. Basically, you were being molested by, as you say, some unknown faction of a corporation of some kind, of an agency or something. And you dug, and when you scratched the surface, what did you find?
Well, the first thing I found was more people that had had similar experiences to me and knew what I was talking about. And, you know, for a long time it was really overwhelming. And I tried to find out as much as I could, and then I got really frustrated because there were no answers. And I ran into a person in Rachel, Nevada, who had had a sex change operation from man to woman, so that the ETs would stop coming and taking his sperm. And I thought that that was very extreme, to have a sex change operation for that reason. And I was meeting a lot of people who were just obsessed with the whole field of study. And I just thought, geez, I don't want my life to be about this ugly stuff. I want it to be about spirituality and people caring about people. And finally, it just got so overwhelming, and I just decided, okay, I can't do this anymore. I'm just gonna disassociate from all this ET stuff and go back to yoga, meditation, and health food. And I tried that for probably the next 3 to 5 years, but it didn't really work all that well. And then we had Bush and Cheney were installed in the White House by the Supreme Court, stopping the recount in Florida. And that was what I considered that a political coup. You know, that was not a democratic process unfolding. That was a political coup.
Oh, yeah. And from my perspective, I could, you know, from over the other side of the pond, that was so obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, Oh, there aren't enough votes for this guy. Oh, where did all these votes come from? Oh, look, we've got new voting machines. Oh, we got voting machines that you can't track. Right. That's intelligent. That's democratic. Excuse me, you're going around killing people who are not democratic, bombing their towns, changing their leaders because they're not democratic, and yet you're being very undemocratic with your diebold machines. Mm-hmm. Promising to bring the Republicans back to power in 2000. Yeah, I've been watching that a lot. Anyway, so you have this, the denouement, the point where you think, okay, right, you know, like I could live my life as a dealy boppers walking around Area 51 and, you know, sitting in the cafe selling your photographs, or your choice was to integrate.
At that point, I was pretty upset that Bush and Cheney landed in the White House, because from what I had seen of them, and I was paying attention to politics at the time pretty closely, they were the last people we needed in the White House. I mean, the Earth is, you know, back then even, was suffering environmentally a great deal, which in turn causes living beings to suffer, not just humans, but all living beings. And I'm thinking, of all the people to get in the White House, this is the last people we need. And I remember sitting and meditating And I was just all my meditation was about that morning after Bush was announced the president. All I could think of was, gosh, I'm just so angry. How could this happen, you know? And, you know, it's the last thing we need right now and blah, blah, blah. And then this voice cuts in the middle of my little inner tirade and says, Bush is exactly the right person at exactly the right time in exactly the right place. Because he is president, many, many, many people are going to wake up. And that just stopped me in my tracks. And my anger left, and I just thought, wow, what a thought that is, you know. And so then I just kind of finished my meditation, got up, and then in the ensuing years, I watched what happened. And indeed, that administration is responsible as a huge wake-up call for the whole world.
That's very true. After all, there would be no 9/11 truth movement if there wasn't a 9/11.
Right.
If they hadn't have messed about with time and space to achieve this particular psychological operation. So you managed to square with yourself. Thanks for a bit of alien intervention. Thanks. Good one. Yeah. Oh, I tell you, it always pees me off when people, I'm sitting there feeling really sorry for myself and somebody's suggesting how perfect everything is, you know, and you're really supposed to feel it. Yeah, thanks.
Well, Ram Dass said it this way. Yeah. He said, the way things are in the world are perfect and they stink.
Yeah, you know? Right. Exactly. So walking through this poo-laden world, places around, you know, I live on a farm, so there are, you know, it's beautiful, but it stinks, you know, it really does.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so we'll be coming up to the top of the hour in a minute, but we are actually at this part in your journey where things do turn around, so it's a proper place to pause. Do you want to tell people your website until, see, we've got this little guitar tune that comes up in a minute. Do you want to tell people your website so people can look at things like photos and stuff like that?
I don't know that I have a lot of photos on my website yet. But my website for my book, which was just published in November, the book is called Facing the Shadow, Embracing the Light, A Journey of Spirit Retrieval and Awakening. And my website is called facingtheshadowembracingthelight.com. And then I have another website called encounterswithhealing.com, because I'm a body-centered therapist, and I'm also certified in Dolores Cannon's hypnotherapy work and some other certifications. And I'm really hoping to pass on my map to recovery from trauma for other people who need that help.
Oh, that's awesome! Because as I was saying in our conversation earlier on, PTSD is a particular interest of mine, and the idea of creating as much of a cure of the big psychological operation. So to have a kind of a negative psyop, an opposite psyop to heal things, a healing psyop. Anyway, don't go away. We'll be back. This is Revolution Radio.
I'll be here.
Welcome back to Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, Wolf Spirit Radio, everbeyond.info, and noborders.radio.co.uk. We're joined tonight by Niara Terela Isley. Yes, I got all that right. And so basically we started off with a rather harrowing account of how you discovered that you'd been serially abducted, and when you're in the military you had a series of traumatic incidents, but realizing that through all that an indwelling soul energy being was kind of enduring through the whole thing.
Right.
What was the moment when you realized, hang on a second, I'm me and I don't feel this yet, I feel this, and what's going on? You know, do you understand the moment when you realized that there was more than just you?
Yeah, well, that came from 8 years of Buddhist Vipassana or insight meditation practice, which I have a back problem now, so it kind of made it difficult to sit and meditate. I hope to try to rebuild a meditation practice at some point. For the past almost 5 years, the book has been my spiritual practice and getting that out, because the spiritual perspective that I have on world events, including my own experiences, I think it's a valuable one. And I kept waiting for someone else to bring it out. Surely someone else is going to think of some of these things. But time would go by, and I never saw anybody address what I was thinking about in quite the same way that I was thinking about it. And so when I went public, just to kind of get the story out there and jettison some of my fear about it, people started to get hung up on, again, the terrible story of the bad things that happened. And I just thought, oh, well, wait a minute, because as I have healed, a lot of good has come out of this for me, because trauma is a great awakener. It's, how do I put it? I mean, it really grabs a hold of you, and if you're going to survive it at all, you have to allow it to shake you awake. So trauma shatters your reality into a billion pieces, and then you have to take those pieces and painstakingly put them back together in a more meaningful whole. And of course, there's all the cracks and the space between them, so it's a bigger, more expanded picture, even though it's one that you've carefully had to reconstruct, where you make room for the experiences themselves and the new data that you have around the experiences. So in a sense, it's kind of like a shamanic awakening. And I liken it to the Billy Jack movie, where it was the trial of Billy Jack, and he actually had to allow himself to be bitten by a rattlesnake and then change the poison in his body to just water so it wouldn't kill him. And it's when you have a trauma like this, that's kind of what you have to do. You have to say, okay, this was traumatic, very toxic to my mind, my body, my spirit, and how am I going to heal from this? And you have to partake of both mind, body, and spirit to heal. And so that's kind of the approach that I took. Nature, being out in nature, is a great healer. And I'm very lucky to have had that connection. And I think my people have helped me too. And they don't help me too much, because I signed on for this to do the Earth human thing. But I did have one experience where I was just having really intense resurgence of post-traumatic stress during the writing of the book. And during that time, I was having a terrible time sleeping. It was hard to even go to the grocery store to get groceries. And I would go there, and I would try not to make eye contact with anyone, because I was just in my stuff so deeply. And it was just a real difficult time. But coming out of it, you know, writing the book was like this catharsis. And I hope it'll provide, again, a map to recovery for other people like myself out there. And the spiritual perspective never left me. In fact, it began to get stronger. The more I worked on going public and writing my book and doing the story, the more these expanded senses began to come online. They actually started before I wrote the book. And I remember thinking, you know, because I would get little messages. I'd start to ask a question in my mind. And lots of times, before I even got half of the question framed in my thought, the answer was coming in. And because I'm a body-centered therapist and I pay attention to the body and the movement of energy in the body in pretty precise ways at times, one time I actually felt this wave of vibration ever so gently come in from the left to the left, and it touched the left side of my body and like my arm. And it had the feel of ever so gentle of a breeze, kind of touching and just barely activating touch on the hairs of my left arm. So this wave of vibration comes in, and I feel it come in that way, and as soon as it hits my body, it turns to English in my mind. And I had just asked the question, so you guys are really there. I really have spirit guides. And again, before I even finished the question, they were there. Yes, we are really here. And then I got kind of delighted, and I thought, wow. So if I have a big life decision, I can ask you guys, and then I don't have to make a bunch of stupid mistakes. And they said, no, that's not why we're here. And they said, you have to live your own life. But we're here as interdimensional teachers for you. And if something important is coming on in your life, we may give you a little push so that you know that that something very important is in front of you. But we're not going to live your life for you. And so it's been really wonderful to have these guides here. And I've had more guides show up as I've gone deeper into being a public figure with all this. I have one guy who's I call a spirit guardian, and he is definitely there almost like a bodyguard. And he really looks after me, and I am very grateful.
Yeah, they do, once they realize that you can hear them, mm-hmm. interdimensional beings tend to start hanging out.
Yeah.
Well, they told me
so many useful things. I asked, well, why don't you guys talk to me more? And they said, well, we actually commune with you a lot. It's just when you ask a question, then you become receptive enough most of the time to hear us answer you. So it's like the very act of framing a question puts me in a receptive state where I can then hear them. And that's most of the time, maybe not all the time. And I remember one time I was, recently I was actually in Sedona, and I went up to my pilgrimage spot in Boynton Canyon, and I was, you know, thinking, well, the book is done for all practical, you know, there's finishing up to do to get it to print. But the book is done, and are you guys there, and do you have any messages for me? So I'm here in my special place and saying, are you have messages? And I felt the feeling of the communion, but I didn't get a message. And I thought, okay, well, I sat up there for 20 minutes or so, and then other people started showing up, and I thought, okay, well, I'm going to head back down, and maybe I'll get a dream or something. So on the way back down, I ran into this person, and we exchanged a few words, and then he kind of looked at me and he says, you know, I have a message for you from your guides. Would you like to hear it? And I said, yeah, you know, because I thought that was unusual because I didn't say to him that I'd been up there listening to my guides. And he said, they want you to come to terms with the fact that you are very special. And I have been running away from being special my entire life. I don't want to be special. Sounds like too big of a responsibility, and it makes it sound like I'm better than other people, and I don't believe that. And so I've been running from special my whole life. So I didn't get the message up and on my special place. It took another human being to look me in the eye and say, I have a message from your guides. And he told me the one thing that if my guides had told me that up on the spire, I probably would have pushed it away. And so when they found the person to tell me, it really hit home that I need to come to terms with the fact that there is something about me that's special. Not that I'm better than other people, but I have maybe special talents and abilities to specially apply to my life and what I'm doing right now, which is teaching and hopefully healing, helping others to heal. And no healer really truly heals. What a healer does is they hold the space for the person to heal themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a funny word, you know, we use the word allow. You know, holding the space is three words, and you know, our language is inadequate to describe the verb of doing this. Yeah, but I get what you're saying. So by creating the space, it allows the all the molecules to rejiggle, because the illness is because everything's bent out of shape. So it allows the form to reform and recrystallize in the right way. So PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
What was your insight about it, about what it was, and which then led you to how can you do anything about it?
Mm-hmm. Well, years ago when people came back from World War II, it was called shell shock. And the way that most people handled it was to drink too much, which hence my father's story. And then, you know, the real understanding about post-traumatic stress hasn't really happened until probably the last decade. And now people understand a whole lot more about it. But when you're living with PTSD, it's very stressful because you've been impacted in a way that affects you at a neurological level. It actually changes your neurological wiring, and you're kind of imprinted with trauma. And then through law of attraction, when you're imprinted with trauma, you can actually attract more of it to you. And so then you're re-traumatized. And so it's a tough situation to get out of. And so you have all this anxiety, you have anger and rage that kind of erupts out of you, you know. And, you know, I still work with that somewhat, but I'm extremely careful not to let it go at living beings, because I love people and I love animals, and, you know, I don't want to be, I don't want to do any damage. So I just don't allow that to happen. And I've got a pretty good handle on it today. But people will tell you, you know, can't you get over it? You know, I mean, it's in the past. It happened. And now you're in this life where nothing like that is going to touch you again. And they just think, why can't you just get over it? Well, you can't get over it because it impacted you at a neurological level. And getting over it isn't a matter of thinking your way out of it or going to therapy and talking your way out of it. It really needs other types of intervention. And the most valuable ones that I have found are body-centered interventions. There is a method out there called TRE, Trauma Releasing Exercises, developed by David Verselli. And it involves doing a series of exercises to induce body tremors. Because when you're traumatized, the natural way of releasing trauma from the body is to allow your body to shake and tremor and quake. And in that quaking and tremoring, the trauma is released. But
yes,
we human beings, we don't allow that to happen because we don't want to look out of control. And if there's children around, maybe we don't want to scare the children by shaking in front of them. So we suppress it. And then the trauma gets stored in the body. And then we have to deal with the post-traumatic stress. So the other therapy that is really good for dealing with post-traumatic stress is emotional freedom technique, or the tapping on the face and the body while saying certain phrases that bring up the emotional charge, if you will, of the trauma. And that's another way to effectively work with post-traumatic stress.
So when we're traumatized,
mm-hmm.
we are shaken.
Yes.
And we hold that vibration in tension.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally our muscles tense up, and it's like a stuck record. We're frozen in time at that moment of trauma.
Yeah.
And over and over and over again, it expresses through our bodies, and as you say, through the law of one, attracts these scenarios and situations to build around that original kernel to create a larger, like, crystal structure that is mm-hmm. Based around that.
Yeah, yeah, what the law of attraction does is it attracts the situations in over and over again, hoping that one of those times it's attracted in, the person will be able to somehow get an aha moment and resolve the trauma. I know that when a person is traumatized, they tend to have a holographic memory of that moment. And it sounds counterintuitive when you think that severe trauma causes you to break off memory and stick it in the subconscious. But even that memory that's buried in the subconscious has a pretty much a holographic, eidetic quality when you do get the memory back. Like when I was being sexually assaulted, I dissociated, and the way that I dealt with it was to dissociate, and my mind memorized every detail of the couch on which those things were taking place, where they were happening to me. And so I have this amazing detailed memory of the couch on which it happened. And that was my way of trying to cope with what was happening to me in the moment.
So when it comes back, you get everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like what we're saying, without the sensory limitations.
Yeah. Well, the mind is pretty careful with us because it doesn't want us to get more traumatic memory back than we can handle. So our mind really tries to take care of us. The unfortunate part is that when the mind tries to take care of us by taking a traumatic memory and burying it in the subconscious, that's a personality defense mechanism that actually plays right into the hands of people doing the trauma-based mind control.
So it's like a bug in the system.
Yes.
Yeah, that allows a hacker to exploit, or is what we call a backdoor. Mm-hmm. One wonders if it was built in deliberately, or probably mm-hmm. just implanted, probably, but likely, like a software mm-hmm. hack, a patch, as it were. Mm-hmm. So, you said I'm really interested in the whole PTSD thing, as I was saying before.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And tell me about your process with this, allowing the twitching, and because I've done it as well. You know, it happens to me. I sometimes like to lay there and just allow everything to unjangle. Because I feel like there's this kind of big jangling metallic sound going on inside me that I have to mm-hmm. allow to jangle out, like mm-hmm. a kind of splinter in my body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk about some of your experiences like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, with the trauma releasing exercises, when I allow my body to tremor, you do the exercises until you've fatigued the muscles in your body enough, especially the lower muscles from like the solar plexus down to the feet. When those muscles have been exercised enough and are fatigued enough, then a natural tremoring just kind of spontaneously occurs. And then if you allow that tremoring to occur and run the course of as much as you can release at that point in time, usually at the end of the tremoring, you feel this deep, delicious, beautiful quiet right in your core. And the feeling of that is like there's such a contrast, because before that it felt like in your solar plexus maybe you were wound up like a watch spring that was wound too tight. And then suddenly that's all gone and you just feel this delicious, deep quiet right in the core of your being. And it's really, really wonderful. And so you continue doing the trauma releasing exercises and gaining ground every time you do it. But I've learned really quickly, I'm a Scorpio. I kind of like to just barrel on through something and release it all in one fell swoop. But I've learned that just can't happen. The body takes it in manageable chunks and it will only go as fast as it wants to go, even if you want to go further and faster. So I have to kind of work with my body and allow it to release as much as it wants to at any given time, then give it a break, and then go back to it later.
Yeah, I've found, because I teach my body to play guitar, you know, so, mm-hmm. and, you know, that there are certain, you can't push it, especially mine, who's mm-hmm. a lazy bastard. and, you know, it says, why should I, you know? Okay, mm-hmm. well, because you want to entertain people. You get girls. Oh, all right then. You get cake. Oh, all right, I'll do it. Okay, what should we do? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's very much that sort of interaction.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, we learn to allow the release to happen. Now, mm-hmm. once the trauma is how, I mean, for instance, how long can a particular trauma take? Have you had enough? Does it vary with every person? What are the variables in the person? What are the qualities of the person that affect how long things take to heal?
Well, the first thing that I think is really important is to want to heal. And I mean really, really want to heal deeply enough to commit to the process. Because I was suffering from post-traumatic stress before I got the memories back. But I didn't realize it was post-traumatic stress. And if somebody had told me that it was, I would have said, well, what's it from? You know, I don't have anything going on that I feel like traumatized me, because I didn't have the memories back at that time. But the post-traumatic stress was really severe, and finally I convinced myself one day that I was just making myself and my family miserable with my anxiety and, you know, my short fuse, and so I just decided one day that I was going to do away with myself. And I quietly made my plan, and the day came when I was going to do the deed, and I sat down, but because I was a spiritual person and I had that inner experience going for me, and I'd had an out-of-body experience a few years earlier, I just thought, you know, I think if you blow your brains out today and you really do the job, you're going to wind up in a place worse than here, because you're not supposed to take yourself out that way. And I write about it in more detail in my book about that episode. And so I kind of backed away from that particular nuclear option and said, well, I can't go on living the way I have been living. So what I did was I call it a 500% commitment to healing and wholeness from that moment forward. And then I just allowed the universe to place the synchronicities in front of me because of my commitment that kept me on the healing path. I'd meet this person and I'd get part of what I needed, and then that would lead me in turn to the next person, and I'd get another piece of what I needed from them, and then I'd be led someplace else and I'd get another piece. And so I just kept following that and following the synchronicities, which became more and more conscious rather than unconscious, and then here I am today, and I'm doing really well. And I kind of said something about Ram Dass at the beginning of the interview, and he made some other comment that I really liked, which he says, in all of my years of spiritual practice, I have not lost one single neurosis. What I have done is gotten to know them all really, really well, so that when they appear, I can say, come in, have tea, we'll talk, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's about knowing myself really, really well and applying that knowledge in a conscious manner. So when I feel angry feelings or post-traumatic stress or anxiety come up, today I know exactly what's going on. And I can take the appropriate steps in the moment to take care of myself so that it doesn't become a full-blown episode of anger or anxiety or whatever it is. I mean, I still have the post-traumatic stress. It's just, instead of being a stranger, now it's kind of like one of those cantankerous friends that you have, but that you know really well and you know how to handle them.
The one who comes around and drinks all the beer out of your fridge.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I got friends like that too. So you've expressed it as a book, and how does the, basically what I'm interested in broaching the subject is of the intent and purpose of the indwelling soul, mm-hmm. who you spoke about before, the Liran soul who occupies. So I would like to devote the next half hour, if possible, to that being and that being's mission. And so, however he, she, they may wish to express themselves, do feel welcome to do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that comes up is I will be so glad someday to go back home and be with them. And when I go back, I know it's going to feel like I was only gone for a long business trip rather than a whole lifetime as it's passing here on Earth. Time passes very differently there. And I'm really looking forward to being back with them because it's just a wonderful place to be. It'll be rest and peace and connection because there's been a lot of isolation for me in this lifetime. I definitely am one of those people that was born to march to the beat of a different drummer, and it has set me apart my entire life. And then these experiences and the trauma set me apart even more. And so it's been kind of a lonely life. And, actually, oddly enough, now that I've gone public and I'm really out there with my experiences, I'm not nearly so alone because, there's other people who have had experiences like myself, other people who have had spiritual experiences that are like mine. And so I have found kind of a family of sorts here down on Earth that I wouldn't have had I not gone public. So it's been a very rich and rewarding process to find Earth family, Earth star family, through just being transparent and honest with what happened to me, open. And so that's part of it. But even still, the more ET I feel, the tougher it is to be here on Earth. And yet, I accept that I signed up for this at this point, and I'm actually happy to be here and fascinated to see how things are going to unfold over the next 15 to 20 years, And I think it's an amazing time to be on Earth right now. I think there was a Mayan spiritual teacher that said, can't think of his name right now, but he said, if you're alive on planet Earth at this time, you have spiritual work to do to help the planet. And I believe that's true for everyone. If you're alive at this time and you have the least spiritual inclination or some ability to look into the great beyond and into the cosmos at an energetic level, then you have spiritual work to do to help this planet. And as far as talking with my people, do you have any question for them that you'd like me to be a conduit for?
Yes, questions. That's what you were saying before, that they like questions. And,
they like questions.
Yes.
They don't always answer them.
Yeah, I know that. It seems to be the way of the universe. Let's mm-hmm. put it that way, they do not answer the unasked question.
Well, I'll give you an example. One time I went to sleep one night thinking I want to remember what I learn on a ship. So tonight, I'm going to remember. When I wake up in the morning, I'm going to remember something about what I learned on the ship. Because I kept saying, why can't I bring the memories back? And they said, you'll know what you're being taught at the moment you need to know it. And I thought, well, that's not good enough. I want to remember. So I poured it on, and I set this huge intention I was going to remember in the morning. And when I woke up in the morning, I remembered one phrase. And that phrase was, and then you will see a fully representational Earth. And it was a great phrase, filled me with tons of hope, but I wish I could have had the whole sentence.
Fully representational Earth in terms of, like, politics administration. Let's say administration. Right. I think administration is a better way of putting it, you know, just like the janitor.
The feeling from the phrase was that if people are come together and they realize their interconnection, and we do away with this old restrictive government and start something completely new where we recognize our connection and consciousness, then we would see a fully representational Earth where every person has a voice again and every person's uniqueness and beauty is appreciated as part of the whole in this infinite diversity. And I think that that's what they meant by then you will see a fully representational Earth. Someday when we're on the other side of this shift and it's accomplished, and maybe we're living in the fifth dimension, then we would see a fully representational Earth.
Okay, so thank you, first of all. So that a question that I'm, you know, considering at the moment is, I am observing stages in the shift that are happening within me and within the people that I speak to. You know, I speak to people all over the surface of the planet, and things are going on, and people are saying, yes, I've been getting that, and oh, yes, I had that. Could you speak about the immediate future, because it really feels like there's a very sudden and imminent shift of some kind. My personal experience is I've been feeling less and less hungry, although that seems to have worn off a bit, or at least like I've been feeling full. And that was like all over the world last week, you know. Everybody was feeling that, or lots and lots of people at least.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
On you go.
Okay, that's all right. Go ahead. You can say the question again. That would be helpful.
Yeah, so the question is, what's the next stage that our human beings are going to experience, and is this, what's the source of the energy that informs that next stage?
The next immediate stage, well, There's so many different factors, and what the people out in space and the way time moves for them is different than the way that it moves here. Trying to think here. What's really crowding into my consciousness right now as I'm trying to speak is this light that has been in the sky at dusk in kind of the west southwest part of the sky, and there's been a lot of YouTube videos on it, and it's really remarkable, and some people are saying, oh, it's just the planet Venus, but it's not Venus. I've been watching the sky most of my life and I know what Venus looks like, and this thing is not Venus, and it is and when you watch it every few seconds, you know, maybe every 10 or 20 seconds, it flares brightly. And sometimes you can see colors around the edge. And I looked at it through binoculars last night, and for just a moment, it looked like five little dots all clustered together. And then it kind of merged back into one. And for some reason, I can't get that image out of my head after you asked the question. And so I'm just wondering what that light is and what it really means. some of the other things that I've been told about contact, which I want it to happen 20 years ago. But, you know, I certainly feel ready. But there are so many factors. One is, you know, should the ETs swoop in here before our consciousness is fully awakened and do a codependent rescue? That, well, you kids have really made a mess here, so we better come down here and clean up Fukushima and clean up the Gulf oil spill and fix all these problems that you've created in your unconsciousness. And, but then it puts them in a position of being responsible for us instead of us being responsible for ourselves. And they want to avoid that as much as they possibly can. So it, right now, I think there's probably a big thing going on about, do we need to intervene? Should we intervene? And how would we intervene? And if we intervene, will these human beings learn the essential things they need to learn in time so that they don't create it all again down the road? Because what we're going through right now is an intensive learning process meant to bring about awakening. It's kind of like a crucible in which all this stuff is kind of coming together and it's putting pressure on humanity as a species. And unfortunately, we don't evolve when things are easy. We get complacent. So it takes being put under this pressure that we're in right now, that planet Earth has become, to get people to question enough and look within enough and start casting about enough to begin to find the insights that are going to guide them into becoming who they truly are.
Interesting. I especially like the little five-pointed star.
Mm-hmm.
Very Venus. So it may be possible that there's something sitting between us and Venus that is refracting the light and adding a bit more of its own. But lots of food for thought.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's a craft that's coming towards us. I've seen YouTube videos where somebody put out that they think that it's a craft disguising itself as a star somehow. I don't know, but that is a remarkable light out there in the southwest sky. And it sets probably around 7:30 mountain time here.
All right, so it's just, who was it? Christy was talking about something that she saw that would, it's just sitting there, and it seems to be like sitting there everywhere. Everybody sees it just sitting there. It seems to be like, no matter where you are, it's still sitting there.
Yeah, it's being seen in all kinds of places, not just here in southwestern Colorado.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. You described a little bit in the prequel about the process of them, as it were, downloading your recordings, your journals, it was likened to your entire body was a recording device that experienced things. Could you kind of talk about it, like, from your perspective and also maybe from the perspective of those who are sitting on the ship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I know as a body-centered therapist, our bodies remember everything that's ever happened to us. It's in the cells of the body, and we carry it in our aura. So if you mess around with the neurons in the brain to inhibit memory retrieval, the memory is still there in the cells of the body and it's still there in the aura. So you can't really get rid of people's memories. You can interrupt the chain that can get them to the memories, but you can't really get rid of the memories. So I went through all these experiences down here, and my body, of course, remembers them all. It carries it in the cellular memory. And so then what I would do is at night I go to sleep, and I travel in the astral body out to the ship, and it's kind of in a far Earth orbit. It's not all that close to Earth. It's kind of far out. And when I get there, I go into this device that's like a glass tube, and when I'm in the glass tube, they turn something on, and the ship is full of, like, holographic computer systems. So you'll be walking around, and you see these translucent systems kind of floating around you that you can interact with if you want. So that's what I mean by kind of holographic systems. So I go into the tube, they turn it on, and sound and light waves bounce back and forth on the inside of the tube, passing through my astral body. And as it passes through my astral body, my Earth memories and experiences are uploaded into the holographic systems of the ship. And then my people can go and access those memories in a holographic, holistic manner so that effectively they can have at least little bits of experience that I've had. And it gives them a better understanding and insight of how it is for individual humans down here who feel so disconnected from each other. And it gives them insight into how can we help, how can we intervene without violating the free will of human beings. And without frightening them, with, you know, without confronting them to the point that we see everything that they're carrying in their consciousness, but they necessarily don't, you know, because they're still hiding a lot in their subconscious, and hiding, and then there's a lot in the superconscious mind that we don't have access to as well as human beings.
That's very interesting. I was having a conversation with a friend this evening, kind of describing this situation of how is it possible that we can use the English language to actually describe the unity consciousness, which does not operate in the same frame of reference as the English language does, and therefore can't be explained. It's outside of the box of English language to, we can only approximate. We can only be poetic about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's about feeling. And a lot of our discussion is about feelings. Which yes. It's totally up my street. I'm all about feelings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, about, you know, getting into those feelings, which are like zip files of, information, packages of information.
Mm-hmm. Well, language is an interesting thing, where I could have a conversation with someone for 2 hours here on Earth that would take seconds if I was communicating telepathically with one of my people. We could have the whole conversation in the blink of an eye, because there's no of this efforting trying to get the other person to understand what you mean, because you're vibrating in sympathy with each other, and it's all understood right then and there. And the thing that is, that's very threatening to people on Earth, because they're worried about invasion of privacy, and of course military and government, they're worried about their secrets being revealed. But what a beautiful world it would be where we didn't have to have any need for secrets anymore. I really think that it would be wonderful. You know, there is such a thing as privacy, but privacy and secrecy are two different things for two different reasons.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want a camera in the bathroom. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, you should be allowed to just do whatever you need to or want to in the bathroom.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
That's true.
But and that's the whole thing. You know, like you're saying, you know, you're up on the ship and you're seeing pictures of screens with people sleeping, and when you were saying that, I just thought, we have people that do that on Earth. It's called Big Brother. You know, it's like this TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Reality TV shows. And it's getting to the point where I'm thinking, I feel like my life is a reality TV show for a bunch of watchers up there. just for the entertainment. You know, it's mm-hmm. like free. I think they probably see me like a Frasier. Mm-hmm. Running the show. Anyway, so
where do we go here?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. That's a good. That uh-huh. is actually a good. Where do you go? What's your unfolding plans, mm-hmm. it's your indwelling soul's intent to unfold. That's really the thing.
Okay. I guess right now mostly it's about getting the book out there, because I worked on this book for almost 5 years, pretty close to 5 years, trying to get it out and pouring heart and soul and so much love into it for humanity, what they are, what they can become. And, you know, right now I just want to get that book in front of as many people as possible. The name of it is Facing the Shadow, Embracing the Light, A Journey of Spirit Retrieval and Awakening. And I didn't put UFO or ET in the title because I'm hoping not to preach to the choir, but to educate new people about what's really going on. So in the book are my experiences, what it took to begin to heal from them, and in a world that doesn't even want to accept those kind of experiences even happen to a person. So healing was very difficult for many years. And then there's this awakening. Part three is awakening. And it's about all the insights and all the spiritual realizations that I've come to as a result of the healing process and the trauma actually putting pressure on me to awaken and expand my view and my perception of things to take in a much bigger view of Earth and the universe and everything going on right now. And there is starseed information scattered throughout the book, but especially in part three, that the information was so amazing that even me writing it, I would watch the information flowing onto the screen as I was keyboarding, and then I'd read it, and I'd have to walk away because I'd just be in tears from the sheer emotional resonance of what I'd just written. And I don't think that it's really channeling. I can't really call it channeling because I don't think that's it. But for me, it's almost like I was born with this zip file as part of my software. And as I have progressed through my life spiritually and awakened more and more, more of that zip file has opened and extracted files that are then accessible to me. And again, they're accessible when I need them, when there is a opening in consciousness where the information is needed, and then boom, it's right there. And it came out in the book in that way. And like I said, there's just a tremendous amount of love for humanity I poured into this book because I want them to understand. And it seems like there's been two camps. There's either the dark, grim conspiracy theorist people, and they feel like, you know, there's just no hope and whatever. And then there's the love and light, law of attraction people. It's, oh, don't say anything negative to me. I won't be able to manifest my perfect life. And mm-hmm. there has
rainbows
to be,
and unicorns.
Yeah. There has to be a synthesis of the two to bring full understanding. And any spiritual path worth its salt includes facing your inner demons and your inner shadow and integrating that to become enlightened. And so I see humanity as in a process of a collective first stage of enlightenment that we could probably also call ascension. And that process is unfolding in this crucible that planet Earth is right now, putting that evolutionary pressure on all of us to evolve. And so in looking at all the different players working with the world today, you know, the Illuminati, the elites, the military, the government, the people covering things up, the people trying to bring information and truth out, I mean, it's all just an amazing tapestry of things that are putting pressure on humanity to awaken. And so in my book, I go into some of the indoctrination methods of politics and religion and family and nationalism and so many different ways in which we're indoctrinated, and then we have the media continually reinforcing the indoctrination. And this is what I mean about the elites know about the law of attraction quite well. They know it and understand it better than many of us out in the general population. And they've been using against us for millennia, programming us into a version of reality that works very well for them and keeps them at the top of the pyramid and us subjugated to them. And it's this kind of indoctrination that I'm hoping to reveal in the book so that people can awaken even more. Because the more people awaken in consciousness, the closer it brings a first contact event that would be open and public. And I want that with all of my heart. I want a better world for all of us with all my heart.
Wow. It's been quite a journey tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for being tonight's companion.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I mean, all I can say is, good fortune on this, and it's going to. Your story has parallels with so many of the other guests of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could pop you all in a little chat room somewhere so you really could chat with each other. You talk to them. Actually, I did used to start that. When I first did it, we made some Skype rooms of people in different ray groups, soul rays, and have a sort of a classifiable kind of energy sequence, and it's possible to group soul families together, it's been quite interesting. It was quite interesting. I did it a few years ago to do that. Maybe I should start that again and get soul groups. Because your soul group is Ray 4, which is quite unusual. And it's often people... it's a warrior. It's the soul of a warrior. You just want to make everything right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like this enormous impulse to... make everything right, and because of your monad ray one is you want to make everything true and right. You've got the personality energy to carry that through.
Yeah, so. I think so. Mm-hmm. I'm very passionate about this.
Yeah, and it needs someone with passion. But it also means that although it's a warrior soul, it's incredibly sensitive. It's not that it's a big kind of slash and burn kind of thing. It's there's a very deep sensitivity and empathy towards everything. So, Niara, Tarela, Isley,
yes.
Thank you very much for being on Journeys with JP. We've probably got about 1 minute, so. Run through your websites again so that people know where to find you, how to get your book and that sort of thing. And, do you do private sessions for PTSD?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so how do people get hold of you?
So the best place to go to for information about the book or about healing work, you need to go to the encounterswithhealing.com website. And that will tell you how to contact me. And then I have another website devoted to the book and information that will follow from the book. And that website is facingtheshadow.embracingthelight.com. And they're easy to find on the web if you just type it into the search engine. And that way you'll find out information about me and you can contact me if you like.
Thank you very much. I'll see you all next week. Good night.